They determined after 2 days of looking at our facility that we did not have sufficient nursing staff and psychiatric staff to provide safe and adequate care for the patients who were there. They did not tell us at the time how many nursing staff or how many physicians would be needed to provide safe care, in spite of the fact that we did ask them. But basically they said, "We're sorry, we do not give numbers. It is up to the facility to make its own professional judgment as to what is adequate." Well, hearing that, we set to work to see if we could try and define this nebulous concept of adequacy. We did work on patient records. We did work on some of the physical environment, making the facility more therapeutically acceptable. We did work in the area of recruitment. At the time the team came through, we were down some staff. And incidentally, any one day you arrive at APA, you might find us down five staff in a given day, because there's sort of transition all the time. But we went out immediately to recruit up to the level of our PCNs. And so we recruited four or five nurses and recruited a couple of physicians. And we also recruited two psychologists. But we felt then we were back up to snuff, and invited the team in December. They came on the 5th and 6th of December, and again, after their survey, indicated to us that we still didn't meet the qualifications. And at that point, we became slightly incensed, you might say, because we believe that it was a professional subjective judgment against some standards which, as far as we know, don't exist or we have never seen, versus another professional's judgment. And we felt at the time that our professional judgment, which was supported by some national data and supported from some of our own internal analysis, that we met standards. And not only did we meet the standard, but we exceeded them comparatively speaking. We therefore decided to challenge the federal team, and we asked for an administrative hearing. They accepted our offer, and as a result, everything in terms of the decertification is on hold, in the sense that we have not yet officially heard from them since their visit of December. What this means is that we have prepared a voluminous amount of documentation and have submitted that through the Attorney General's office. And in turn, they have submitted that to the regional office in Seattle. An independent reviewer or consultant will be hired and will go through our documentation and will make a decision. We are awaiting that decision. If we prevail, then the decertification would not have occurred. It would be null and void. And we would be reimbursed retroactively.
Are there any questions?
Yeah. Can you tell me what happened between the certification the year before and this year that might have stimulated this sort of response?
One of the ironical things, we believe, is that at the December survey, we had a richer mix of staff, and actually more staff than we did a year ago when we were decertified. And to even adds to that irony, on the 9th of December, 3 days after the certification team was in, a team from the Joint JCHA,
Joint Accreditation
Hospital, which is a private body, but it accredits facilities nationwide, and it is the norm.
Mm-hmm.
They came through, and they gave us all full certification for 3 years on some of the same issues. So, needless to say, we are somewhat confused.
Well, I have another question then, too, Dr. Henry. Has anybody taken a look at what we're spending right now to fill out all of the forms and go through all the paperwork and the rest of it just so we can get this $1 million? I mean, we may be at a point where we're losing money to try and get the money.
Well, I think that's one of the issues. One of the reasons we wanted to discuss this today is if, in fact, after the hearing, we do get some specific standards from the federal government. We've asked them before about this, and in actual fact, we sort of stabbed in the dark to add an additional 5 RNs. They had indicated that we were short of nursing staff, so we added additional 5 RNs to our staff. But if, in fact, they come out with some specific standards saying we need another 5-10 staff, I think then you have to evaluate whether, in fact, you want to spend the additional state dollars in order to bring in the federal dollars, considering what other kinds of things you have to do for to belong to the Medicaid, Medicare program, the other administrative things. At the moment, until we have that resolution, I wouldn't want to be hasty and immediately say we ought to drop out of the program. But I think you do have to evaluate what kinds of things you have to put in, particularly as long as we're JCAH certified. If we were to lose certification in JCAH also, then there's some question of whether other insurance companies would give us third party. And we do have an additional almost $3 million of other kinds of third party insurance from VA, Blue Cross, Aetna, so on. So I think it's real important that we try to keep certification at the hospital. And at the moment, we feel that we do have certification from the Joint Commission, and therefore we do have the option of looking at whether we want to continue with the Medicaid certification if, in fact, they make demands that we feel are beyond what we ought to be doing.
General Gruenberg.
This is a legal question. The standard for certification, is that a federal standard or a state standard for this particular purpose?
It's a federal,
but there are no written standards. I went to D.C. and actually met with the then existing or acting director of healthcare financing, secretary of healthcare financing, and they were unable to give me any written standards and unwilling to give me any written standards on this. A special trip last June on a number of issues, but this was one of the issues that I went to D.C. on, attempting to get prior to our recertification visit, trying to get some standards out of the Fed.
May I follow up on this, Mr. Chair? To follow up on this, Commissioner, is this a problem that is unique to API, or is this part of the growing federal trend at cutting down on entitlement programs? Because the federal government, I believe, cannot, as a matter of policy and law, cut down directly on entitlement programs. And as a result, what they have done is go about attacking these entitlement programs in an indirect manner. And this is simply, as one person would say, a firefight or a skirmish in the war.
Mini Graham Rudman.
A mini Graham Rudman.
If you would want, my answer to that would be that a short answer would be yes. And
okay,
my long answer would be that this is very similar to me to the sanctions in the AFDC food stamp program.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's an attempt at basically not only trying to hold the state's feet to the fire, but beginning to cut back on what the federal commitment is. What I see the sanctions as more than really making the states hold their feet to the fire, because the programs are often impossible to administer. It's just an increase in the percentage that the state has to pay in order to have a federal program. Instead of 50-50 now, we now have about a 48 federal and 52 state in the AFDC and food stamp program because of the sanctions. And this is the same thing that's going on with Medicaid. It's the same kind of
Mr. Chairman, if I may, as I'm sure you're aware, we are dealing with two resolutions tomorrow on exactly this problem, the Medicaid waiver problem and the AFDC error rate problem. And one of the purposes of the hearing tomorrow that I would like to see come out of this is for us to make a record. I presume you will be testifying in force tomorrow. I would like to make a record that we can present to our congressional delegation, not only with those particular resolutions, but with factual record, testimony, supplemented with written reports, whatever we can do. And what I would like you to do, to be prepared to do tomorrow, since this committee has taken a strong stand at this initial stage in that we are sponsoring these two resolutions as a full committee, which means it is equivalent to every member of this committee co-sponsoring those two bills. And that's very unusual. In fact, I think unique. If, in fact, the problem at API is but one aspect of a nationwide problem of decertifying hospitals, I would like you to provide us with information, if you can do some checking between now and the time of the hearing tomorrow, on other, how much of a nationwide problem this is, because we will be able to incorporate that in the record, and frankly, it is at least this representative's intent to coordinate and to disseminate what we do here in Alaska to some of the other western states. Because at least with respect to those other two resolutions, we presented them to the Western Legislative Conference, and all the western states unanimously endorsed identical resolutions. And I know they'll be most interested in what we do here in Alaska. So if you can provide that information at the hearing tomorrow, it will be disseminated.
We can also put it in even at later, if subsequently received.
Representative
Miller has a question.
Yeah, there's no question that other states have been decertified. One of our sister states in the Northwest region, Oregon, Oregon State Hospital, was decertified for very similar reasons last year. They are in court over that issue. They have been recertified as a result of meeting adding additional nurses, but they have sued the federal government on the basis of the lack of standards and are trying to recover the monies that they lost last year.
Before I yield to Representative Miller, is this just this is not, I hope, just a problem in the West, or is it simply a problem in Region 10?
No, it's safer.
If you can provide that either tomorrow or as quickly as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, that was my question. So Mr. Grunberg stated it, and you answered it, so I thank you.
Please continue.
I'd like to switch and go to the Community Mental Health Center. I'm pleased to report that we have finally come up with a rational basis for the appropriation of funds to community mental health centers. For a long time, many sources have been saying the division needs a rational basis for allocating funds. About 10 months ago, a committee, a task force, was formed comprising 13 persons from community mental health centers, 3 persons from the Governor's Mental Health Advisory Council, 4 staff persons, and a consultant to wrestle with this problem of formula. After working long and hard, they came up with a formula which involved 4 factors. One was that of population, the other was cost of living, and a third was what's called a base funding, and the fourth was maximum negative change. Basically, maximum negative change means that 1 cent in a given year cannot lose but so much money. We sent this formula to the various mental health centers and the government mental health advisory council and asked for their response to this. And in fact, we're in that stage right now where we are still gathering responses. And the responses are interesting. They are really extreme. That is a center, the largest center in the state, Anchorage, has indicated that it will not support the formula, in spite of the fact that one of the key members on the team was a representative from Anchorage. Because the formula disadvantaged them in favor of rural areas. And we have got a letter from the Yukon Koskoquim Health Corporation, which says they will not support it because the formula disadvantages rural areas and supports urban areas. And I said to the staff, I think the formula is working. Since it appears to be
disadvantaging everybody.
I think probably it's not so much the formula, and incidentally, we try to keep the formula so as simple as possible. You know, for example, somebody suggested, why couldn't you use need instead of population? And the answer is simply yes, that need would be a good one. But unfortunately, the Division of Mental Health doesn't know what the need is, at least not in all areas. We have not done a statewide study, a scientific study, to really determine need. We have done several of the studies here and there, but that's only good for the particular area. So until we have developed the capability to have a good database, then we would leave the idea of need out. And it's the kind of formula, I think, that we can look at it from year to year and see how well it is working and add or subtract in increments.
I wanted to ask a question if you've completed what there's...
Just one other thing here. My feeling is that the formula is not the problem. And the problem is that there are 13 centers that would be disadvantaged, and there are 14 that would gain something. Well, in a system that is already underfunded, to take money from somebody who doesn't have enough will hurt. And I think what you're hearing are the hurting voices and not the formula. So the if we had a separate pool of pot of money from which to make the allocation, I'm sure we wouldn't be hearing what we're now hearing.
Doctor, from my own experience on the Mental Health Advisory Council, the mechanism that was used in allocating the funding, at least between 1975 and 1980, was that the staff would come up with a recommendation to the council on the allocation of the pie based upon projected budget anticipated revenues, or anticipated appropriations, rather. And then the council would make that policy recommendation to the division. And it sounds here like you're basically shifting the major method of making the decision away from the governor's Mental Health Advisory Council to this ad hoc committee. Why?
Representative Grunberg, I'm sorry that you got that impression, and that it may have been in my the way I communicated it. But the council endorsed and also sent representatives to this task force, and the task force has made its recommendation, which we will take to the council. I'm sorry. Now we're just getting feedback from every mental health center. And the council will take up this matter at their meeting in June, February 15, 16, 17.
I see. I have another question, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Okay. And this gets back to the question of need. You know, the first issue you discussed was suicide. And as I understand the incidence of suicide, it's mainly a rural problem certain groups in it's not.
It's higher in rural areas, but we are higher than the nation, even in our urban areas.
No, I understand that, but I'm talking about the question of need here. I'm wondering why that does not, why you're using a formula based, I gather this is on population of the region rather than client population or some kind of a unit like they use for schools, the ADM, the average daily membership concept, which doesn't deal with population figures as a whole, but rather population figures in the utility, in the schools themselves. And why not impart something like that, which reflects the actual use of those community mental health centers and the difficulty of treating individual cases, like a suicide may require far more treatment, a potential suicide, than just a casual drop-in.
You're raising some of the tough questions with which the committee wrestled with for several months. And they decided that these things were too complicated to start to build a formula when you really don't have the actual data. It's easy to say all school-age kids will be given so. You can count a school-age child. It's easy. How do you count a schizophrenic? What kind of schizophrenia? Who's going to measure it? Who's doing the counting? And it really gets very difficult. And it gets into some pretty sophisticated epidemiological model for coming up with those kinds of things. And I don't think we're ready. We're not there yet. So what we're doing, we decided to use population. We know that in a given population, X percentage suffers from mental illness. We know that. So we can apply that and get some kind of index of need. It's crude, but it's the best we have.
Yeah, because the federal government now uses this DRG concept where they try to standardize this kind of a thing. I'm wondering, have they ever imparted that into the mental health area?
That's a little sort of an aside, but it's very pertinent in that the federal government, again, Healthcare Financing Administration, is requiring DRGs, diagnostic-related groups, for psychiatric facilities. And this has never been done before. It's very simple to say a person suffering from an appendicitis should spend, under normal condition, 2 or 3 days at the most in a hospital. Therefore, we reimburse you based on 3 days stay. Anything over that, you eat the cost. How do you say to a chronically mentally ill person, your stay in the hospital is going to be 3 days? As a result of this, the National Association of State Mental Health Directors have prevailed upon the bureaucracy not to implement that recommendation, which should have gone into effect in February of this year. So as a result, they're doing a nationwide study for the next 2 years to make that determination.
One other comment I would like to make, Representative Grunberg, is that your system, in some ways, to have that kind of system would actually suppose that all of those people needing treatment were coming in. And what is probably more accurate about any kind of system that is under-resourced is that you're not serving all the people because, in fact, there aren't the people who are outreaching and going out and finding the individuals, particularly in rural Alaska. And so what we have is a system that we estimate is probably 50% underserved. And from that standpoint, it would be very difficult at this point in time just to take figures from the different centers and say, we will fund it on the basis of how many people are coming into that center. Because different centers serve very different. Yukon Custom Health Corporation, to me, is the most difficult one. They have 56 villages to serve, and they have like three professionals to do that. And it's an impossible situation in terms of serving the population that is in that area. So their figures may not show the kind of need that is truly there. And so it's not like the school formula. It's a lot harder to do than the school formula. But we take into, you know, definitely understand that there are some other indices that we could use, and over time we would want to do that.
Representative Hanley has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, I think we probably all received letters expressing some concern. Is the Anchorage funding less than it was last year, the proposed budget, or is it?
No, it's not.
It's the same. Then my other question, it seems something that I heard during the interim, recognizing that API is the only residential facility, and that much like the catastrophic illness, that patients would be coming from all over the state and being housed in that facility and cared for. In that situation, would the care for that patient then come out of the Anchorage budget, or would Anchorage indeed be able to bill the other community for the care of the person coming from some remote rural area?
That's a good question. The answer is no, Anchorage does not bill another area. It absorbs it right there.
Anchorage would absorb the cost of caring for that.
API,
I think that was one of the
API absorbed it, not Anchorage.
Well, I mean, the mental health funding for the urban area of Anchorage would
right.
then be used to care for that patient,
yes.
even though the patient was a resident of some remote area, and recognizing that there was no other facility to care for that patient. But then the funding would be part of that was allocated to
Anchorage. Yeah, but let me interrupt you.
Anchorage.
Wouldn't it also be true that if the normal flows continued the same and they got the same budget, they're being budgeted already for that group of people that are coming in from those outlying areas? In other words, if you were taking and saying, now under the new budget, anybody that comes from out of town, their money actually goes down there and you don't get any money for it, that would be bad. That would be your scenario. But if, in fact, their budget is being basically left the same or improved, as they've indicated, then there isn't any cost that they're not being reimbursed for, in essence.
Well, Representative Taylor, I think there is an argument in the Anchorage area, and it's not only in the mental health, but in all health and social services, that in fact, because of the way in which services developed over the state, very centralized in Anchorage, you know, large institutions, your correctional institutions, both adult and juvenile, the API, that what has tended to happen over the years is that individuals would go to those institutions and then would sometimes be discharged in the local community. Not all the time. For example, the juvenile system, more often than not, people did go back to their home communities. But out of API, oftentimes they were discharged into Anchorage. And the Anchorage Mental Health Center feels strongly that there are more people from outlying areas who end up having to be served in the Anchorage area than what would be taken into consideration just on a population formula. Overall, I would agree with that. But of course, if you look down the line, our goal is that we decentralize that process. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is the mental health facilities in Fairbanks, where we now, in the budget this year, have a comprehensive mental health system in Fairbanks, including designated beds, where individuals will actually be able to be placed into Fairbanks Memorial Hospital involuntarily. That individual will then be able to be served in a group home or in a apartment complex there in Fairbanks, and the total process will take place in the community, and there will never be an individual actually coming to Anchorage. And our goal would be ultimately that the system would break up into regional hubs at a minimum and sub-regional hubs ultimately, so that Anchorage doesn't become a place where individuals leave their home community, come to Anchorage, and get dumped in that community for a lot of reasons. For one thing, usually it's not good for treatment. An individual needs to be close to home in order to get the best possible treatment and to function better. So in the long run, I would hope that Anchorage does not have to live with that. In the short run, there's some argument that there are a larger number of mentally ill individuals being placed in the Anchorage area. But I want to just follow that with the caveat, there's also, the department has funded more services in that area than in any other area. For example, the adult residential care system, which provides over 100 beds, primarily used by the chronically mentally ill, has only been in Anchorage. It's the only place that we've ever funded any beds. And so from that standpoint, they have had systems in Anchorage that nobody else has ever had. And the reason was because we knew that the population was centered in that area. And as we expand, what we want to do is get some of those same services that we've had in Anchorage and other areas. So I think they start with a base that is higher than some other areas around the state. Now, there's arguments, but I just think there are some services that other communities have not had that have been funded in Anchorage. So there's some, there is a certain amount of balancing on that.
But basically, you don't feel that any of the services have been adequately funded, that this is all hypothetical. Also, in regard to yesterday's discussion, any funds put into mental health will be a, shall we say, a discount against an ultimate settlement on the mental health plans case, so that we really aren't, and we're under a crunch to settle that. We might as well put in the money earlier than later and pay interest on it.
That's correct. I would say that both Dr. Henry and myself would indicate that in many ways all these arguments are moot, and it's, you know, it's like kicking somebody who's already laying on the ground, because the system is underfunded, and to set an allocation formula on an underfunded system doesn't make a lot of sense. But on the other hand, we are not only being pushed by various people within our own system. The legislative budget audit last summer hit us real hard again about having an allocation formula, so we assume again that the legislature wants us to be more equitable. We certainly keep getting that, so we felt an obligation to try to put a task force together to do that. Ultimately, I'll have to make that decision whether in fact we ought to implement that or should we wait. I think Dr. Henry has indicated earlier today at the Senate hearing that he might rather wait till there was a new pot of money and begin the allocation formula as you bring on new funds. One of the things that we have not had the opportunity to do in bringing on new funds in mental health in the last few years is having open pots. All the funding that we've gotten has been designated. And when you designate the funds, it doesn't enable us to really use any kind of formula to do it. You know, somebody designates for a given community, that fund goes to that community. So it would only be if we got a general pot of money into community grants that we would be able to use the formula in that way.
So the allocation formula actually revealed the deficiencies and
Right. Hopefully
will work as a leverage.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Doctor, having lived most of my adult life in southeast Alaska and traveling to the Anchorage community, I've often wondered about the continued growth of its population, and you've just given me an explanation for that, and now I can understand better.
True Bethel, too.
Are they in your district permanently?
I'm sure that as we put other pieces of the system in place, and persons don't have to leave their communities to get the care they need, we probably will see a shift. I'd like to wrap up by talking about the mental health facilities in Fairbanks.
I'm a doctor. May I interrupt?
Sure.
One final question on this. One thing that you said caught my eye, and I had not reviewed the budget and audit document here. Recommendation number 4, I assume, was what you were talking about. And that states that the Community Mental Health Services Act 4732-520, subsection 6, subsection 4 says, provide a means for participation by local communities in the determination of the need for and the allocation of mental health resources. Section 6, provide a means for allocating state mental health funds according to community needs. I am now, for members of the committee, referring to the report at pages 12 and 13. And from that language, there is a recommendation is that, at least has been interpreted, to have a formula approach. I'm not at all certain that that's legally correct, that it requires a formula approach. You can do what they're saying in the statute without the kind of a numerical concept in a formula, by using the qualitative rather than quantitative approach that had been used in the past. And I think that if you proceed from that assumption that you require a quantitative approach, then you may come out with a significantly different, number one, process, and number two, result, than you will with a qualitative approach.
Harper, then I think there's no question that you're correct. If you walked on one road, you probably would have different experiences. However, I think the qualitative approach is more subjective. The quantitative more objective, and it is you know, probably one of the things we have been looking for is to come up with a system that is fair, that is understandable by anyone who looks at it, and could measure it themselves.
Thank you.
We have a very short time left.
Yes, I'm pleased to say that
I apologize.
We have the ability now to put in place a comprehensive system of mental health services in the Fairbanks area. And we have made grant awards to three grantees. They are the Fairbanks Community Memorial Hospital for Multi-Purpose Center and Vocational Education, to the Fairbanks Community Mental Health Center for apartment living and group homes, also to the Presbyterian Hospitality House for day treatment program for children. And again, to Fairbanks Community Mental Health Center for group homes and specialized foster care for children. Those services should be online on the 15th of February.
And in addition to that, there will be $4.2 million was appropriated for capital construction, which will include the multi-purpose center, as well as crisis beds and a children's residential center, diagnostic as well as treatment center in Fairbanks. Those buildings should be completed by sometime early next fall. The design phase is just about completed and will be going to bid in March. So.
Doctor, I might suggest to you, have you looked at a facility in Southeast Alaska yet that might be the initial one at which you would start developing your model down there?
About what is called the Ernie Haugen Memorial Band.
I wondered if you had, if you're really looking
at it. We have looked at Mount Edgecombe Hospital, and also we have had a request from the Sika Community Hospital on the 27th of this month, next week. I'll be going down there to meet with the community to talk about that.
Two questions, Mr. Chairman. First, looking at our adult services, I see you have vocational education. It's not a typo, you're not talking about voc rehab, you're talking about voc ed.
That's correct.
Because there's some concern in the vocational education community that they have been left out of the foundation formula funding. I'm wondering what the relationship this is to that.
This is specifically for the population you deal with.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And secondly, because we are running out of time, I have some questions that were submitted by staff here, and I'm wondering if we can give those to you and ask for a written responses.
Could we do that, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Thank you.
I just had one comment in closing. I mentioned it to my associates here. I'm certain that I'll be able to make a better decision about your funding formula as soon as I can determine the level of increase that each of the facilities in my district has received.
Or decrease.
Don't even do think decrease.
No, I just have some sympathies with these gentlemen if they're developing a formula and wish them wish them luck and perhaps better success than we've had in coming up with a new educational formula, because that certainly has been a very complicated process.
They're not giving the job to the Department of Education, so they're a big step ahead already.
Very good.
Thank you, and we will continue to keep in touch with you on this matter, and tomorrow we will be talking specifically about the two resolutions of the committee, which actually bear merit very much on this. So if any the commissioner or any members of staff wish to testify or to show the implications of this kind of federal activity in other areas, we'd like to hear. Thank you. And the time is now 2 minutes after six. The meeting is concluded. Thank you.
It's just a hardcore of what's left here.
That's us.